Please, O Lord our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Well, I had planned today to continue with our Hebrew series, but as concerns with the COVID-19 virus have been growing and the media going wild, I thought it would be nice to have some time to reflect on what's going on. And then, how could I resist discussing the coronavirus with our Maftir reading today in Numbers on the ashes of the red heifer? This passage is all about washing, cleansing, and quarantining. Now, we read this as we prepare for Passover, but it's timely today as well. So let's unpack our Maftir reading for today, and I'll draw three important lessons or ways that we at Ruach Israel can move ahead in confidence. So we are in the book of Numbers. God instructs us to give an unblemished red heifer or red cow, which is really more like a brownish cow, to the priest. The heifer is taken outside to the temple to be slaughtered and completely burnt to ashes with a rather odd concoction of cedarwood, hyssop, and crimson stuff, it says. The priest and those who burnt the cow become ritually impure in the act of sacrificing the cow, and then they must wash their clothes and bathe. Then the Torah goes on to discuss how a person who touches a human corpse, a dead body, shall be impure for 7 days. That means that he can't go to the temple for a whole 7 days. It's kind of like a quarantine. But he becomes clean again by sprinkling the ashes of the mixture, mixed with water on the third and then on the seventh day. And then he's again to wash his garments. Now, halakhically speaking, the only reason why this commandment is not practiced today is because there's no temple, and so it's inoperative. However, because this is not operative, even in modern Judaism, a person who is a Kohen is not supposed to come into contact with a dead body at all because there are no ashes. So a Kohen who is religious would not attend a funeral where the body was present. It's interesting that this ritual does not only seem strange to our modern ears, even ancient ears thought this ritual particularly weird. Midrash on this pictures King Solomon, the wisest man in the Bible, saying, "I have labored to understand God's word and have understood it all, except for the ritual of the red cow." Rabbinical commentator Rambam explains that this commandment receives the most critique because it's performed outside the temple, which is unique. That means that it was in view of people who are not Jewish. Now, if we were to pick and choose which ritual we should use as the public face of Judaism, I'm not sure we'd choose the ashes of the red cow. Now, because this commandment is so strange, our ancient sages called it the most important commandment. Why? There's a rabbinical story about an encounter between a Gentile and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who is a central figure in rabbinic Judaism following the destruction of the temple in 70 CE. The Gentile asks about the ashes of the red cow. "These rites that you carry out look like witchcraft," he says. "You bring a cow and slaughter it, burn it, crush the remains, take the dust, and if one of you contracts corpse uncleanliness, you sprinkle on him 2 or 3 times and say to him, 'You are clean.'" Rabbi Yochanan replied, "Have you ever seen someone into whom a wandering spirit has entered?" "Yes," the man replied. "And what do you do?" asked the rabbi. The man answered, "People bring roots and smoke them under him and sprinkle water on the spirit, and it flees." Rabbi Yochanan said, "And should your ears not hear what your mouth speaks?" Okay, so Rabbi Yochanan brushes the man off by saying, "Listen, your rituals are just as weird as ours." But after the Gentile man has gone on his way, the disciples ask Rabbi Yochanan, "This man you've pushed off with a mere reed, but to us, what will you reply? We have the same questions." He said to them, "By your lives, it is not the corpse that imparts uncleanliness, nor the water that affects cleanliness, but it is a decree of the Holy One, blessed be He." The idea here is that there is no inherent uncleanliness in touching a corpse. And there is no inherent purifying agent in the ashes of the cow and how they are administered. It looks like a witch's brew, just like the pagan concoction. But it's entirely different. It's all about the command of God. And this is why the sages see it as the most important commandment. It's pure in a sense, because it's such a mystery and requires love and trust within the mystery. This commandment is compared to a lover's kiss, which cannot be explained, but only experienced. Now, I don't think they're referring to the experience of the ashes as the lover's kiss, but they're referring to the experience of devotion to and trust in God within the heart of the mystery and lack of understanding. Trusting in God in uncertain times is not something that we can speak about in words, but it's something that we can only experience, like the lover's kiss. So I want to apply this lesson to the coronavirus epidemic we're in right now. There are a lot of unknowns with the coronavirus and a lot of things to get worried about. Where did it come from? Is it just part of our broken world where sickness has been sewn into the fabric of earthly creation? Is this a military experiment gone wrong? Some people feel that this is a biological weapon that's a smaller part of a bigger plan to topple the economic powers of the world. We wonder, will I get sick? What about those whom I love? People argue about the severity of the virus. Some say the flu is worse. Others say the opposite. Will we find a vaccine? Will it mutate? Will it overpower our medical system? What about the vulnerable among us? And apart from the virus, what about all the hype and hysteria that's led to a run on Costco's toilet paper, empty shelves in the grocery stores, and community-wide quarantines? The entire country has shut down. How far will this go, and when will it stop? The lover's kiss in the red heifer ritual is trust in the mystery of God's larger plans. Can we find a lover's kiss in the COVID-19 outbreak? It's in the experience of trust in God, in the mystery of uncertainty and the unknown. Things are changing so quickly. In a matter of weeks, everyone's lives across our country have changed. And it's scary. But we find the kiss when we can rest in a greater assurance that God is still in control. He's still good and will guide us through, even when we don't know what's next and how this will turn out. We can be of the most calm and collected and focused of people throughout the course of this epidemic. Not because we have all the answers. Not because we believe a vaccine will come out soon. Not because we think the warmer weather will end its life cycle. Not because we think the virus is not as big a deal as everyone has made it out to be. Whether those things are true or not, our trust is in Hashem, in His life, and in His greater promises for us. So, like the red heifer ritual outside the camp in plain view, this is a great opportunity to share your faith. Collective anxiety levels have been rising even without the coronavirus and social distancing policies. Everyone's on edge, everyone is worried. Be that person that others come to and ask you how you can be so at peace. I don't have the answers. Much is a mystery to me, but I trust God. I want to move into our second point, which is about spiritual cleansing. There's another passage in our parsha today that resonates with the day. In Exodus 30, verse 17 through 21, we read, "The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Make a basin of copper for washing, and place it between the tent of meeting and the altar. Put water in it, and let Aaron and his sons wash their hands and feet. When they enter the tent of meeting, they shall wash it with water, that they may not die.'" This is kind of like reading the CDC website right now, isn't it? In that time, viruses and bacteria hadn't been discovered yet, and the lines between physical cleansing and spiritual cleansing were likely much more blurry. That said, I think what's in view here and in our red heifer passage is not so much a physical cleansing from germs. This is more of a soul cleansing to prepare their souls for service in the Mishkan before God. The red heifer ashes are considered a purification for sin. But think about what they're used to cleanse. They're used to cleanse a person who has cared for someone who has died. A mitzvah. Caring for a body is not a sin. It's the opposite. It's something we're commanded to do. Remember, even the priest who is commanded to burn the cow becomes unclean by the body of the cow, whose very ashes are used to cleanse him. What's going on here? The red heifer ashes wash away death from a living person. Death is the ultimate result of sin. That doesn't mean that when a person dies, it's the result of a particular sin. But death itself first enters our world because of humanity's sin. This ritual in some way cleanses a person who has been tainted by death, in a way foreshadowing a day when we are completely freed from death. We're about to come to a beautiful passage in our study on Hebrews. Yeshua came to free us from the fear of death, chapter 2. And then in our readings today from Hebrews 9, Yeshua entered into the holies once for all, not by the blood of goats and calves, but by his own blood, having obtained eternal redemption. For if the blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer sprinkled on those who have been defiled sanctify for the cleansing of the flesh, flesh here refers to earthly things like the temple, how much more will the blood of Messiah, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, cleanse our conscience from dead works to serve the living God? This Kol Vachomer argument, if the ashes of the red heifer cleanse us in this world to approach God's presence in the temple, how much more so does Yeshua's sacrifice in the greater Holy of Holies lead to eternal redemption in the world to come? In some way, the heifer ashes create a foundation for, or an image for, the greater work that Yeshua would do. This time, not in the earthly temple, but instead in the real Holy of Holies, in the kingdom of heaven. I digress into future messages on Hebrews. My point is that the idea of cleansing is built so deeply into the fabric of the Torah. And cleansing on earth, in the flesh, whether it's washing our bodies from dirt, or viruses, or bacteria, or our souls from unseen spiritual gunk, it all points toward a greater reality, a greater cleansing that Yeshua has already accomplished in the coming kingdom. And we are in the process of realizing when all will be pure, all will be made holy, both ritually and physically. There won't be any coronavirus or any plague or any quarantining in the coming kingdom of God. The CDC says that we should be doing a lot of washing, 20 seconds, all the time, after a cough, before a meal, after cooking, after a handshake. We don't like to say it, but when you get the itchy nose and you have to pick a little bit before you rub your eyes. So let's use this as a time to cleanse our souls, too. You know, when we Jews ritually wash our hands during the Shabbat table blessings, or for the more traditional, before every meal, we recite a blessing. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al netilat yadayim. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who sanctifies us with his mitzvot and gives us the mitzvah concerning the washing of hands. Of course, the mitzvah was for the priests on our behalf. But with no temple, Judaism incorporated this into daily life so that we could look back and bring forward God's sanctifying works from the temple into our homes and into our hands. The lesson is a humble reminder that we live by God's ways and not our own ways. It speaks powerfully to our souls that we're under his sovereignty in every aspect of our lives. When I wash my hands on Shabbat and say the blessing, I like to think of all the worries of the week being washed away under the water as we move into a new time and a new space of rest. So while we wash and keep away from germs, here are a few things we can try. Pray for one person for 20 seconds while you wash your hands. You might think of something you're particularly grateful for. Bring it up in your mind until it makes you smile. Or, as you get ready for Passover, sing two rounds of Dayenu. It takes about 20 seconds. Dayenu, 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 Dayenu. Let's move on to our third point, which is about community. I know that the reason for extreme social distancing is to stop the virus before it gets so overwhelming. The idea isn't supposed to be a panicked reaction to the number of cases or the severity of the virus as it is right now, but instead an attempt to prevent what could become a much larger epidemic. And we have to participate in that. The motivation is noble. We need to protect the vulnerable among our communities, and that's why we're on Zoom today. But I have to be honest. Extreme social distancing is also pretty scary. I find myself wondering what the long-term effects of social distancing will be. For a few weeks, it's a hardship that we endure for a greater good, but what trends will it set in motion? I don't know. Isolation is a terrible thing. We already live in a tremendously isolating society where genuine community and relationships have been replaced by social media. It's a lie that we can just sit on our computers and engage in real relationships. We need hugs and handshakes and laughs and high fives and pats on the back. We're about to launch a really cool initiative here at Rook Israel called the Community Glue Initiative to help us strengthen relationships and friendships at Rook Israel, to help us better internalize and live out of a community-centered worldview. On the one hand, extreme social distancing seems like bad timing. On the other hand, maybe it's perfect timing. I want to propose to you today that we rally together during this physically distancing time and go over the top, above and beyond, to make this a time of community building, even though we can't be with each other in person. What can you do? Do a FaceTime call with each other. Check in over the phone. Text encouraging verses to each other. Be intentional and get creative. I want to challenge each of you to reach out to people in our community that you might not usually talk with or don't have a relationship with, and use this as an opportunity to establish a new relationship. We must invest more into community to counterbalance. Yeshua's example when it came to the leper or the untouchables was always to touch the one that no one would touch. He was not afraid of the unknown. He was not afraid of the disease. I'm not saying that we don't wash our hands and be careful. Love, in this case, requires that we take precautions and don't give this thing an opportunity to spread. Love means doing Zoom call for services. But we can do that in trust rather than fear and panic. People should never feel isolated. We should be praying for each other more during this time. No matter what your circumstances, use this as a time of blessing. Use it to experience the lover's kiss of trust inside the unknown. Use this as a time to get back into some healthy rhythms for daily prayer time, to slow down a bit and focus on things that are really important that we rarely choose to do. Let this be a time to reconnect and invest in your family, your children, your marriage. Whenever something else gets canceled, don't get mad. Think, nice, some unexpected time to slow down, reconnect with God and to the people that He's put into my life. So together at Rook during this uncertain time, let us be stronger. Let us be more united. And let us have greater trust together in our Messiah. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Please, O Lord, our God, let the words of the Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, let the words of the Torah sweet in our mouths. In the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. In the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And may your descendants and the descendants of your people.